Natural History 2, November 2nd, 1982, Sylvia Busis and Gene Meth interviewing Jerome Edlis. We're just a little bit over the first hour cassette. When you mentioned that you moved to the East End there, your dad bought the house and you and your brother were already married?
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
My mother passed away when we lived on Raleigh Avenue, and we, in 1922, after mother passed away, my sister lived, still living, Edith, and she was at home with us.
Mm-hmm.
We moved up to the Victor Place, you know, where that's up near the Highland Park.
Oh, yes.
Up
mm-hmm.
on the hill.
Mm-hmm.
And then after being up there for, I think, 3 or 4 years, then Dad bought the house down on Euclid Avenue, because he used to go to Margaret Street Jewelry to ride on shows on mm-hmm. holidays. He was a real better Jew than I am.
What kind of Jewish education did you have as a child?
As a child? Mm-hmm. Well, I think I did pretty good. I had, I'll say that my dad was again points out that he was just unusual, because here was a green doing all these things, coming over here, getting elected, doing this, having time for his family. And as far as my schooling, that was, you got the English, but as far as Yiddish was concerned, I went to Cheder down on Crawford Street, where the shul moved from 2nd Avenue up here to Crawford Street. And I had, when I was 6 years of age, a gentleman by the name of Adolf Greenberger, Hebrew teacher, taught one of the few Hebrew teachers who taught us by English. In other words, we learned our Jewish by English, because I still, neither can members of my family, we never talked Hebrew or Jewish at all.
No Yiddish spoken at home.
Dad taught German, and anybody who came to the house, my mother Sally could talk German too, so they got along very, very fine. And any Jewish person that come there, they could talk German to them and they understood.
It was close enough to the Yiddish.
So I went to Cheder from the time I was 6 years old until I was bar mitzvah at 13. I was confirmed that invitation of Rabbi Coffey at the Tree of Life, although they didn't take anybody who wasn't a member of the congregation, which was understood.
What was the rabbi's name?
Rabbi Coffey.
Rabbi Coffey.
And Rabbi Coffey was a very influential man in the community.
Why did he invite you to be confirmed?
Because he was a very good friend of my dad's.
Ah, and where was the Tree of Life then?
Craft Avenue.
It was on Craft Avenue.
Yeah, where the building still is today.
So was confirmation at 16 as it is today?
Confirmation was at 16, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And a girl by the name of was my confirmation teacher, Ray Trulisky. You know her.
Ray Trulisky.
Sure. Paul was a very, very good friend of mine. And the Trulisky family used to live on Raleigh Avenue. The Trulisky family lived right around the corner on Aaron Street. And the old man Trulisky had a stable of horses. They moved up from Panther Hollow, where they were in the milk business. They moved up to Aaron Street. And then I was confirmed, and through my dad.
Now, where was Polizetic at that point? Where it is now, or was it?
Part-time, they were on the crop. When I went to Hayter, it was Crawford Street.
Mm-hmm.
And then they went to Squirrel Hill.
Well, was Polizetic, was that the outgrowth of the Austria-Hungarian temple?
I see. Yeah, and I was the first president of the Polizetic Men's Club. In fact, I think that we initiated, if I'm not mistaken, I don't want to take credit for something like this, and so the first men's club of any congregation when we opened up at Squirrel Hill, and I was elected the first president.
Sounds like you were following in your father's footsteps.
Yeah, I did everything. I was chairman of the school board, the English board, the Jewish board. I run the educational department.
At the shul.
Shul.
Yeah.
My kids were all confirmed at our shul. The boy was a mitzvah.
At all at Polizetic.
All at Polizetic.
Even though you were living out in the East End.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
We always made, well, I'm still a member of Polizetic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a member there for 67 years.
Was there any confusion because your father was such an Orthodox man and your mother came from a Reformed background?
She immediately set up a Orthodox home to the extent that the rabbis, Rabbi Shinsky, Rabbi Zivitz, used to always say to people, you can eat in Mrs. Edwards' home. She kept the Orthodox away. In fact, my two daughters keep a Orthodox set of kosher home. The one in Columbus, unfortunately, Millie, her husband's parents belong to the temple. They're in a small community, stylish to belong to the temple. So she belongs to the temple. But these kids, one belongs to Sara, is Bethel.
Zara is Mrs. Nathan Tabor. And
Nathan was, he's very active out at the Bethel, but I want you to know he's a better Jew than I am. He goes to Polizetic every morning for minyan.
Really?
And Zara and Nate will not eat meat on.
And your other daughter, other daughter Pittsburgh?
She's married to a young fellow from New York, Bob Cohen. That's one of them there.
Oh, they live in Pittsburgh too.
Oh yeah, they live up in, they live right there as Zara, up in Melbourne.
And I see.
And I'm a member of Washington Street Shop based in McNishan Hall, and also Polizetic. And I was a member for years out at Margaretta Street. I'm a good
A good belonger.
Right.
And I try to observe as much as I can, but I was getting back to my dad because he was every day the lion's throat and the evening been for a while. Stores closed on all the holidays. And he is still, in my mind, he was liberal to the point where we were never pressured. We had to go to shul. I used to go to shul with him. He'd tell me to Balachazim and stuff, and he used to say, you read the English so you know what he's praying. He's praying for you. That was the type of man he was. He didn't say, you have to do this. Be quiet to eat. You wouldn't eat nothing out of milk, eggs, potatoes, something like that. He used to say to me, well, look, you're a young man. You're growing up. You want to eat? You eat something. He wouldn't say, you can eat meat. But whatever you want to, inasmuch to say, do what you want to, but I wondered when I was with him. But unfortunately, I try to keep as much as I can, but I'm not the Jew that he was, as far as being an Orthodox. He was a liberal Orthodox, if you can call so.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's
there's not
very
many,
good.
Not many girls in the office here, they used to tell him, come 5 o'clock, when it was getting a little dark, he used to say, Mr. Anderson, that little visitor girl here from Kansasburg, Italian girl, staff. She was with us, I think, about 43 years. She used to say, Mr. Anderson, it's time for prayers.
Oh, my.
He'd go into the offices. We were in the building next door. He'd go into the office there. They'd close the door. Mr. Anderson wasn't in for anyone. He couldn't go in there until he got through. And every morning, wherever he went, if he was on the train, he'd engage a stateroom so that he could have it put on his bed. He'd engage a hotel room for the day so he could go in and out. He never advertised. We saw.
Well, for a man in public life like that, that must have really inspired a great deal of respect on the part of his non-Jewish associates that he was so observant.
Oh, he never hesitated to let anybody know that he was a Jew and an Orthodox Jew. Unlike the temple people, when my dad told me a little story, that you go wherever you want to. When my dad was appointed, and he told us so, and that he was disappointed, that's why I mentioned Temple Jews. When dad was appointed city treasurer, the council, the rabbi Levy was the rabbi out of
J. Leonard Levy.
Leonard Levy at the Royal Home. And they were friendly. He had to be. But Rabbi Friedman and Rabbi Levy from the pulpit says that on a Sunday morning, Crowley says, no doubt you know that one of the members of the Jewish group in Pittsburgh has been honored and appointed city treasurer. That is the first Jew ever appointed to a mayor's cabinet. And, he says, however, he says, we don't think that the Jews should be too active in politics. The Jews should be seen and not heard. And he went on a tirade of a lecture. However, 2 years later, when the legislature passed a resolution, an act, to set up Council of Nine, which we have now, the so-called Businessman's Council. Before it was a common council, there was every ward had two for select council and one in common council. It was a big group of men. There was some scandal about that, and they changed it over to the Council of Nine. So when Dad was appointed, he pointed out to his flock out there that that you should be careful, careful. However, 2 years later, when Enoch Rao was appointed to the council, and Rabbi Levy says, oh, ladies and gentlemen, one of unseren Yids was honored and was appointed to city council, Enoch Rao, who, nothing against Enoch Rao, Mrs. Rao was a fine woman, and Enoch Rao was a fine gentleman. Dad had nothing against them at all, as far as that was concerned. But because they belonged to the temple, it was good, you could talk, you could do this, you could do that.
Did your dad ever discuss that with Rabbi Levy?
No.
No.
Dad never I remember I was in the temple once. We went for confirmation, very good friend of the family's, and I took my mother, she was there, at the request of my dad, because dad wouldn't go.
He absolutely would not.
For confirmation,
yeah.
See. And I went there, and I wasn't comfortable at all as far as that was concerned. And I was never been into their temple outside of here about 6 months or a year ago was. Oh, I sat with my mother half of the session, and I says to her, look, Mom, you stay. It was just a very good friends of the family. I says, you stay. I'm going down to the amateur. I'll be back during Shavuos. I said, I'll be back to get you. See, I says, but I'm not too comfortable here. then the only other time I went out to Mr. Shapiro, the lawyer, you know,
Leo Shapiro, yeah.
But he passed away just recently. He was our labor lawyer.
Well, that was different.
He represented us.
Mr. Edlis, this half tape is going to run out. It's obvious to me that if we want to finish, that if you can spare us another session, then you won't be tired and
I'll
we won't be
glad
tired.
To get rid of you.
This is now the second interview with Mr. Jerome Edlis, done by Sylvia Busis and Jean Meth for the National Council of Jewish Women, Pittsburgh Chapter, Oral History 2. And the date today is November 4th, 1982. Mr. Edlis, it really was wonderful that you gave us all this written material. I think that very few of the respondents have had that much documentation for their stories. And now that we've filled in about your dad, we'd really like to talk about you, because really the whole first time you were talking in terms of, you know, your relationship with him and some of your perceptions of his career. You did tell us something about your early schooling, and I was reading in that beauty booklet, it sounds to me as if you had quite a busy and colorful career of your own, extracurricularly and every other way, right?
Well, I hope so. I enjoyed life up until the present time.
That's evidently what's kept you going in such a wonderful condition. You went to the different schools in the Hill District, and then you went to Shenley High School, is that right?
Yeah, I graduated Shenley.
Shenley High School, and from what I read in that booklet, you were very busy, just like your dad, even when you were in high school, is that right?
Yeah, unfortunately, I would have had the yearbook, but I'm looking for it. It's in it's lost someplace. I thought I had it down in Florida. My daughter, I talked to her on the phone before she came up, but she looked good and she couldn't find it. But I have it, I think, someplace around here.
Well, you can always call us if you find it, and maybe they could Xerox a few things out of that for us, too,
yeah,
because
yeah.
You were very active in high school, weren't you?
I was active in high school, both athletically and scholastically, and I was the only student that ever wrote a class play. I want you to know.
Did you really? I never heard of a student-written class play.
Yeah, we had a special war play.
This was World War One?
World War One.
Yeah.
It was Uncle Sam.
Yeah.
You were an actor, too.
So the teacher, my teacher says, why don't you write the play? And we will take what the normal type of plays they were having all the time. So we did. That's what we put on.
That's amazing. What did you call it? Do you remember?
That's
okay.
In your class play, because they have a picture of all of the performers.
Oh, my goodness.
And I have to locate that, but I didn't locate
So you did a lot of writing, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I was going to go into journalism. That's what I made a mistake instead of going into the beauty business.
Well, it doesn't sound as...
I was going to go into journalism. That's why I went to Ohio State.
I see. They had an outstanding journalism school, didn't they?
Yes, very much so. And I liked to. I was born in a family where my dad, of course, I give him credit for most anything that I did because I just followed it in his footsteps.
Well, did all eight children follow in his footsteps? That doesn't always happen in a family.
Unfortunately, no. No, unfortunately. The boys didn't want to have any part in the business. They wanted to do what they wanted to. And my sisters, two of them went to New York. And I was practically the only one left at home. So that's why we were as close as.
Yeah, you really did have a very special relationship with your father, didn't
you? Yeah. And, of course, with my mother at the same time. Mm-hmm.
Don't you think that happens with the youngest, particularly in a large family? Sort of like Benjamin in the Bible?
Well, it started when I read this here. I didn't read this very thorough before. This morning I took a little time to read this. But when I see here my dad's bringing up in Europe, Adolf Hitler was born in 1860 in Michigan, and he was very fond of his mother, the European mother. In fact, that's one of the reasons, and she passed away at an early age. And that was one of the reasons that he left Europe to come to America. Because when the mother passed away, my grandfather, my grandfather, he married a second.
With the stepmother.
And wanted no parts of it. And he left home. And he was, mainly because he was very fond of his mother. And that's where my dad apparently got his bringing up. Not so much from the father, but from the mother.
From the mother. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. According to this story here. See, her name was Ethel, and we have a lot of Ethels in our family.
Well, that often happens in families. Yeah, you have a lot of people named for an outstanding person.
A lot of Adolfs and Seymours all the way down through the whole family. But anyhow, getting back to what we were...
Right, so you went to Ohio State for journalism, and what happened?
Well, decided that I was going to be a soldier.
Yeah.
I couldn't do something for my country.
What year was this?
That was in 1917 when I graduated. When I graduated high school.
Oh, I see.
In
17. After you wrote that play, I guess you were feeling very patriotic.
So I enlisted. And so then I spent the next year.
Were you in this country, or
did
they?
I didn't get out. I tried to get out, but I didn't get out. I lived at the expense of Uncle Sam.
Okay.
Pretty good. And
where were you stationed?
Well, I was stationed at Fort Hays in Columbus. That was a regular army camp. I enlisted in the Air Service. I was only 18 years old, mm-hmm. just coming out of high school. And my parents, of course, weren't very pleased. pleased about that. I decided to put on television.
Oh, really? Oh, you just enlisted.
My dad came over later on, and I got the demo, but it was too late.
Yeah.
See. Anyhow, I enlisted there and spent some time in the 4 days, and then they sent us down to San Antonio, Texas, to Kelly Airfield, which was being established. And through some fraternity brothers who were very good and friendly to me from school, I met, they were already down in Kelly Field. They were a little older than me. They were graduates of Ohio State.
I see.
But they were...
Had you already enrolled in Ohio State before you enlisted in the service?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I was at Ohio State. I spent the first 6 months up there.
Oh.
See, before they shipped us out, mm-hmm. after I enlisted. And then after being at Kelly Field, then they we came back to Pittsburgh, and we spent 3 months at Carnegie Tech. In the, so we were in the ground section.
Oh, that was a nice placement
fly.
At Carnegie Tech.
Yeah, yeah. And I was privileged there, I think, with something a little unusual, too, because I enlisted as a private man. I wasn't old enough to be considered as an officer. So I was a buck private when I enlisted. And when they shipped us to Carnegie Tech, I was made a top sergeant.
Oh, my goodness.
See, and had 120 men with me, under me. They called me the kid because I was I was just a young punk. And anyhow, we stayed there for 3 months. And then from there, we went to to Arcadia, Florida, where we had two fields. One was a gunner's field, and the other was a pursuit field, Carlston Field, and Dorr Field, two different fields, but under the one group of 120. And I was in charge of that group of 120 men. And we stayed there until... stayed all the way through until almost the fall, and then there was a request for candidates for infantry officers training. And I then went up to Camp Gordon, Atlanta, Georgia, but with five other men, and we were at officers training school, preparing to be an officer. There we were until about, stayed there for, Thanksgiving Day there. And then it looked as though the war, since we went into the, since we got there, we were going to finish them up. So it looked as though that they were going to call cease and the war would come to an end. And we were, happened to be at Camp Gordon whenever they armistice
was declared,
before we ever got out. So we had an opportunity either to remain and become a first lieutenant in the infantry or take an honorable discharge. The group, together, we stayed very much together, those five men. So then we decided that we were going to go back home and live right.
Were they all Pittsburghers?
No,
they were from all over.
Five different parts of the country. And,
so you came back to Pittsburgh in 1918.
In the end of 1918.
Yes. And then what did you do?
And my dad do? Gonna go back to school? Or are you gonna go to work? No ultimatum, but just that's it. And since I felt that he was operating the business by himself and really had no real help here, and I thought that I'll forget about my journalism, apply it to the business if I could. And I says, I'm gonna go to work.
So you came into the business with your dad then in 1918, or?
Late 1918. Mm-hmm.